All lines are now bridged.
Great. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the EHR Reporting Program Task Force. I'm Mike Berry. I'm with ONC, and really excited to have you with us. And I want to thank our co-chairs and all the task force members for all their hard work these past couple months. I know it's been a lot of homework assignments and a lot of work behind the scenes. And on behalf of ONC, we really appreciate it. We really look forward to your recommendations next week. I'm going to start with roll call, and I'll start with our co-chairs. And when I call your name, please indicate that you are present. Raj Motwani.
Good morning, present.
Jill Shoemaker.
Good morning.
Zahi Butt. Jim Jurgis.
Present.
Bryant Karras.
I'm here.
Joseph Kunich.
I'm here.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Kenneth Mandel.
Hello, everybody.
Abby Sears.
Good morning.
Sasha Terma. Cheryl Turney. And Stephen Waldron. All right. I think Stephen's there. Is that you, Stephen? All right. Thank you. All right. I'll turn it over to our co-chairs to kick us off. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mike, and welcome, everyone. And we're in the home stretch. Can you believe this is our last task force meeting? It's been a whirlwind, and we so appreciate all of the feedback and the help that you all have given us to come up with our recommendations. We're just going to jump right into the standards adoption and conformance measures. This is our last set of recommendations to review, and we're hoping to reach consensus on our recommendations. So I'm going to turn it over to Raj.
Thank you, Jill. Appreciate it. And thank you, Jill, for covering last week as I was out. And thanks for the task force on the continued great work here. Lots of incredible progress. Jill and I have been reviewing the previous recommendations that generally have consensus and some of the reconciliation that needed to happen, and things are looking really good there. So as Jill mentioned, our goal today is to work through each of the measures in this set and get feedback from everybody so that we can hopefully move all of those above the line, as we've been calling it, and get things wrapped up in the meeting next week. So Jim and Ken, I'll turn it over to you to let you drive this through the Google Doc or slides, whatever you prefer, but all yours.
Thank
you. Just a reminder, let's please use the hand raising feature. Jim and Ken, I'll help just kind of manage that.
Okay, Ken, do you have it? Pull it up so people can see as you edit. Can you hear me?
Yeah, certainly everyone can be in the, yeah, there it is. So if Kathy's got the Google Doc up, then my edits should be clear.
Okay. Can you guys hear me, by the way?
Yes.
Yes, we can, Jim.
All right. Hey, thank you. Hey, a lot of rich feedback last time, so we've spent some time processing it all. And we've been able to trim a couple of metrics. I know, Sasha, you had mentioned a few measures, and we were able to go through each combination. And what we have done is to try to simplify it for everyone. We want to walk through it in a way that sort of makes it efficient to get through by the end of this session. One of the things we added here was, you know, in our section, that, and I think in many of them, there are numerator-denominator combos, but a little bit of context for kind of what was driving that minimum set that we're recommending is what we've added at the beginning here. And people can read through the rationale. If you scroll down a little bit, Ken.
Chris has the, yeah.
Oh, okay, got it. So basically the goals of the metrics are really to understand the use of these apps, reusable and substitutable apps, but even in the context of a broader app industry, as well as the bulk fire and upcoming EHI requirements. So if you go ahead and scroll down in the interest of time, please people comment about it, but those goals there are important. So part of the driving principles is if we as an industry, customers or ONC, wanted to have insight into how this market is and this capability is being used for further effort or further policy. So here are some of the high-level themes of kind of what's in the numerator denominator. Understanding what FHIR versions people are actually using for these APIs. Understanding the volume of apps that are able to read versus also write back as an important evolution, to see whether those apps are burgeoning or not. Types of resources being exchanged. So one of the themes is, some insight into what data is being valuable, what resources. Obviously, having insights into the volume and activity were a key theme in these numerators and denominators, as well as the exchange its implications on potential infrastructure burden as we get into, how many gigabytes, et cetera. The distribution of app availability and utilization and how are they being used would be desirable. Are they being used in certain areas of the country, certain underserved areas? Is there equity of use? Just some insights into how, where the activity is. And that sort of got into the denominators we talked about by site. It would be nice to have information about geography too. Ability to identify denominators allow insights to normalize. So some of the denominators that were different between the clinician and patient-facing apps really were, what would be useful, what context would the numerator be useful for? So, and then some insight into the cost to the client for API calls, as well as the use and cost for the upcoming EHI export. So if you scroll down, we can quickly walk through and then we can open up for discussion. To simplify, it looks like there's a lot of measures, but actually if you look at the numerators between clinician and patient-facing apps, there's a lot of similarities between the two. And some of what's driving it, obviously one of the metrics for both of them was the ability to read versus write. That is important to track across both patient and clinician-facing apps, but that doesn't really apply to bulk FHIR. So for both the patient and clinician-facing apps, but also for bulk FHIR, a lot of the numerators were similar. If you look at the themes, it's either each of these numerators is designed to understand read-write, what resources, what version of FHIR, and then also some sense of volume activity, as well as some sense of the size of data, really with an eye towards performance and infrastructure demands and equity. So for the denominator, I know that there's really kind of three sections, but if we just look at the numerators, they're pretty similar across both patient and clinician-facing apps. So before we get into the nuances of the denominator, would welcome if there are any comments or questions about what's in the numerator for these two and why. Okay, if you look at the denominators,
Jim, there's a couple questions. Let's go to Steve Lane first.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Jim and Ken for thinking this through so carefully. I think that clearly this goes a bit beyond what what we were handed by the team, to comment on, and I think this sort of takes it to another level of clarity. And I just really wanted to thank you for that. I think looking at these dimensions of, read-write, patient-clinician-facing, whether the apps are reusable, I think really does get us at differentiations that are going to be valuable for ONC and for our community as we measure these things. I think the challenge for us is deciding, which of these really belong in version one and which, are kind of future aspirational goals.
Hey, Stephen, that's a great point. And one of the ways we thought we might address that is in our final recommendation, we have a notation for ONC to consider phasing. you know, we think having all these insights would really help ONC, but to your point, if it's thought that there's too many, they might consider phasing it. Of course, if they do, they'll miss some of the insights, but I think ONC could probably decide what's most valuable for them to track.
Right, but as we've said, the value of phasing in recommendations is that the things that are, you know, rational to do out of the gate, you know, we start getting experience with, and those that are going to require a bit more effort on the part of the vendors or providers to in order to be able to generate them, you know, they can signal to the industry that this is what's coming in a year or two, and then the work can be done to prepare for that.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah, good points. And I agree. I mean, I think we can definitely write this in as a phased approach once we come up with the particular priorities here. And then I also just, in the vein of what Steve was calling out, I appreciate the really good work by Jim and Ken. And I know there is a large basket of measures, and they've reduced the number here. I think we, at some level, should grow comfortable with that because this is a complex space. And having these various measures, I think, is going to be really important given the complexity. Sasha, I think we have you next.
Sure. So a couple thoughts. First, I'm not sure that we actually want to call these numerators and denominators. I understand that the ones that are labeled as denominators, I think we're capturing for context. But the numerators are not going to be directly associated with the denominators. Like, we're not going to put, first of all, most of the numerators have multiple numbers in them. And we're not going to, like, directly divide them by the denominators. So I think that terminology might be a little bit maybe misleading in this case, because I think what we're really talking is about a number of counts, which are called numerators, and then some sort of contextual number counts to give understanding.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's not as clear as just a numerator and a denominator.
No, and then I think it would be helpful for us to sort of measure when we think about counts, to think about how many of these we're going to have, because even if we look at clinician-facing endpoints, the total number of API calls by resource type and FHIR version, that's going to generate, 60 numbers, right? Because if you have approximately 20 resources and maybe 3 versions of FHIR. And so, like, when I look at these, I think we absolutely need to prioritize some because there's a lot of things that would be reported here with all the stratifications on each of these counts and then all the denominators. So I would strongly encourage the group to identify which ones we think are going to be the most critical because I do think there's a large volume. My final comment, I guess, is that some of these, I think, there's still comments in here that we would need to clarify, and I'm not seeing if that's addressed, like site, for example. Did we put in a definition of that somewhere?
No, Sasha, that's a good point. There was a couple of, as I was going to go through this, there were a couple of questions that were in here, and let's take that one, for example, if we could right now, site. The reason we did sort of the goals, purpose, and driving principles documents is that so for each numerator and denominator combination, we could understand, you know, what just for the data elements, forget the numerator denominator, but both for measures and metrics, what's their value in it. So what we were trying to get at with the site by site was the notion that having some sense of distribution, or you know, is it a small handful of sites where all the action is, but the rest of the country is not seeing the equitable benefit of these. So site was just meant to see, you know, a little more granularity on patterns of usage. Now, I don't know if that's co-ID, you know, we have to consider what the informatics representation of that was.
Yeah, I think my fear is just that, you know, I've been through meaningful use, and when we have that type of ambiguity in measures, it leads to so much swirl and waste. So if we can't be precise with what we mean by that, I think we need to move it out of the agreed upon recommendations as a count and put it into like for further discussion so that we could get some clarity on what we're recommending and then consider it.
Well, we have some time here, right? And I'm seeing Steve Lane's comment in the chat that he took a stab at defining site. And so, you know, I'd say let's work through this. I think to your point, Sasha, we can move to being a little bit more specific on these things where it makes sense to.
Yeah, and I guess one question is, there are other programs that measure things by site. For example, I know in the Meaning for Use program, for example, there's co-ID. Maybe that's not the best here, but Stephen, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I had put in a comment, earlier that we needed a definition of site, and it didn't look like anybody had drafted one. So I just took a wild stab at that, not being an expert in that particular data element. But I do think we need to have site defined. So I put that up on page 2, I think, or 3, whatever, in the definitions. But please, others, make that better.
So why don't we, I want to give Steve Waldron's patiently got his hand up. I want to give Steve Waldron a chance to ask his question or provide his comment, and then we can go back to looking at the definition of site. And then Jim and Ken, if you're planning to go comment by comment or measure by measure, we can get back to that. Steve Waldron, why don't you go ahead, please?
Yeah, so real quick, I agree with, I think this is a lot of great work. I like the preamble that kind of sets things up. I think this is the area that we should spend our complexity tokens. I think these open APIs are really what people think about around interoperability. If we want wide-scale interoperability, I think we should do that. I like the idea of thinking about phasing these. For me, I think what's really important is looking at both read and write so that there's these first set of measures have both of those in there. As it relates to resource site and fire version, at this point in time, it may be a little bit more complex, but I think moving forward, I would say that any fire versions that are kind of in the marketplace, then it's just how many of you have for that version and not worry about kind of resource type. But those fire versions that are being implemented into the marketplace, then that's where we spend the time thinking about what resource types are also being done. That may limit the number of measures. And then I would think the volume transferred for me would be a lower priority.
Excellent, thank you. Other comments, Steve, did you have some chat conversation going? Maybe we could have it audibly.
I think we're trying to get at the question of site. And what is the purpose of measuring site? And we need to define that before we, figure out how it's going to be measured. Again, I just took a swag at it. But I think the key is, we all appreciate that it's valuable where possible to look at, inpatient versus ambulatory versus home care versus post-acute care versus, the various sites of care. And then I think a lot of these, it's also important to look at, perhaps that's it. Perhaps it's really just, the context of the care that's being provided. I mean, I guess if you're looking at a multi-hospital system, whether it's hospital A or hospital B, it doesn't really matter. So I really do think it's kind of the context of care. And when I just, Googled site of care last night, and lo and behold, CMS has this beautiful, list of codes that describe, just that concept. So that was my thought.
This is Ken. I'll just agree with that and add in that there is a diversity, equity, and inclusion angle to this as well to make sure that the distribution of the benefits of interoperability are reaching all segments of the population.
Josh, I know you have your hand up in the comment as well.
Yeah, so there was a historical measurement challenge in MIPS when they wanted to report e-prescriptions by tax ID. And there's not necessarily a, direct intuitive relationship between placing an e-prescription and a tax ID, and different systems implemented it in different ways, right? Maybe you use the department of the provider who was logged in and placed the prescription to find a tax ID and associate it with the e-prescription. because you have to stratify that by that reporting. But I've received so many questions over the years of people who, you know, that seems unintuitive, whatever method was used, or it's inconsistent between different EHR systems because there's not like a great way to associate a prescription and a tax ID. And I worry that what we're going to set up here with this type of stratification is a similar thing. There's no necessarily direct connection between the audit log data when an API call is made and like a site or a location. We could try to invent one, right, by like requiring the provider to enter maybe a department when they log into the app and then store that in the audit trail. But we're inventing a lot of additional documentation and data storage for something that, you know, I think I just want to be really clear, like this is data complexity tokens that are not just on the side of the reporting, but like, you know, net new documentation and data storage filing in the audit trail for something that maybe doesn't have that much of an intuitive link in the first place, because part of, you know, many apps might be not necessarily directly connected with a particular department in the first place, if the idea is that you know, you're able to do something in an untethered or more independent way. So I don't want us to make a decision here which sort of inadvertently forces not super meaningful documentation, if that makes sense.
Hey, good points. I wonder if one of the things we're trying to get at is by this denominator some sense of distribution, and I hear the challenges you're describing. Another is to have some sense of equity of, you know, are underserved areas using it more or less, and are there other established denominators, if you will, that would provide some insight into distribution of use that wouldn't be, that the EHR would have access to and wouldn't be a new data element?
Well, there are some things, right, that already have a location associated with them. A visit probably has a location associated. If you require someone to pick a particular department or a location, then, you know, that could associate it there. But when we talk about things like API calls done by clinicians or patients or other types of apps, those aren't things today that necessarily have a link to an encounter with a location. And so, you know, I don't know that we're going to start at a point where we have something convenient to use for that sort of stratification. I think, you know, we're talking about really, is it worth it to the industry to add a stratification where we don't necessarily have one today?
Well, good points. I wonder if, like, if we're thinking about the patient-facing apps and maybe even provider, if we knew that, you know, wealthy urban zip codes versus, I'm wondering if, is there some patient info, even though, they may be visiting in Florida when they log on, but really they live in Massachusetts, right? But still, I'm curious if that is could be used, if some other way of getting at distribution for like what areas of the country, what zip codes.
So if the goal is sort of to say for context, you know, what are all the zip codes where this system is used, then, you know, theoretically a company like Epic could go to each of its clients and we'd ask Sutter and HCA and Ochin and all of those folks, okay, give us a list of all the zip codes where you use our software. And you could give us that list and then we could provide in our sort of aggregate report a total list of all zip codes. But I don't have any way to match up, you know, HCA's API traffic or Sutter's API traffic or Ochin's API traffic with zip codes. You folks at Sutter or Ochin or what have you don't even have that because, again, there's not a location associated necessarily with the API call to start with. So I think that if we're just trying to get a contextual sense of, like, overall we're looking at reporting from an EHR like Epic, what zip codes is it used in? Probably feasible for us to gather a list. Again, that's not stored in the EHR, so we'd have to ask everybody, but, you know, we could go ask everyone and put together a list every year. But the challenge in my mind is associating that with API traffic.
Yeah, Stephen Lane's suggesting that then we add terminology in here to measure these variables in where possible in our goal. And what you're pointing out is there are challenges to we can't just point to a standard for that unit.
I guess my suggestion would be, given the inconsistency of sort of site stratification, I would start with the contextual information proposed in I and II. How many active providers are there? How many EHR users are there? And if we are able over time to get more specific about sites, we decide to prioritize, you know, our future complexity tokens there, you know, it's an option. It would require, you know, much more, I guess, development in the sense of expecting every system to probably capture locations or sites or departments or however you would categorize it. It's not impossible, but it's so much more significantly complex in my mind that I guess I wouldn't put that in phase one. I would say in phase one, if we have a sense of active providers and of EHR use, that's going to give us a good amount of information. Is trying to get at a site thing, especially if we have to put caveats of where possible or know that it's going to be implemented in an inconsistent way, going to be worth it if we spend a lot of time implementing something, but then it's done differently because it's not possible to do consistently? Our data might not even be so good that we might look at it later and be like, gosh, it really wasn't worth collecting this because now, you know, we don't have a consistent data set even to look at.
So let me just ask one question. What if it turned out that, you know, HCA, you know, Kaiser, Sutter, really provided the vast majority of API calls that are comprising the metric? Given that we don't know what the average number of API calls should be for an HCA or a Kaiser or Sutter, how would we judge whether there's any distribution of these technologies making the API calls? And if, for example, zero federally qualified health centers were making API calls, how would we know that? And wouldn't ONC, with its emphasis on social determinants of health specifically, want to have an idea?
Yeah. So it's certainly possible, you know, in Epic's world to differentiate by what I would call like a different Epic deployment, right? So there's an Epic database at Sutter and there's a different one at OCHIN and a different one at HCA. And we could measure each of those separately. And if we wanted to call each of those a site, I actually have no objections to stratifying in that way, but if we try to collect sort of site or, you know, EHR deployment specific data, we do run into two challenges. One, typically when we ask our customers for permission to use their data for something like this, they get more sensitive if the data is identifiable to them. So we need to be cognizant of, you know, that piece of it. And then the second piece is that Epic's sort of, you know, EHR deployment model is not the same as all the other EHR developers. And so while in our world it might make sense to count Sutter as one and OCHIN as one and HCA as one, in another EHR's model, those might all be living on the same cloud and they would not make sense to count them each differently, or they might have, you know, Sutter as 20 separate, you know, different EHR deployments across different clinics, and they would count that as 20. And so I guess the challenging part there is not how would I measure it from an Epic perspective, but how would we get something that was meaningful from an industry perspective when we know that different EHRs have sort of different, you know, deployment models, and what might be sort of straightforward for Epic to measure because of our deployment model is not going to be the same for all the EHRs that are out there. Our trade association has been talking about that. The problem is that there's not one sort of model of measuring sites that is sort of common across all those models, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I want to pause for a quick minute. Brian, you've had your hand up patiently. Is your question or comment related to this issue, or is it a different issue?
Yeah, I was just going to lend support that I think that we need to think carefully about how the information is going to be used. And if it's just a matter of getting some kind of understanding of geographic availability of these tools, we probably can do that from individual EHR vendors that don't have, you know, a multi-jurisdictional footprint, rather than asking systems that are using a centralized install to support many locations to add that extra complexity. That's probably too difficult for them to tease out, and it might not even be used except for kind of a one-time sniff test to see if it's working, if the distribution is going. So just trying to add my support to Sasha. I'll take my hand down now.
Thanks, Frank.
All right.
Hand back over to you.
Yes. So thanks. So a couple of things, and as going through the numerators, which really in many ways apply to clinician and patient-facing apps, what we hear is, you know, it's challenging for phase one to understand how to get a sense of the geography. And so considerations for that in phasing and figuring out what our approach is before making it a requirement in phase one is what I was hearing. The rest of the denominators, you know, the sense of volume, I think we had some comments about the resources and the volume from Sasha and others. I think understanding the versions, any issues with that or the volume activity. We also heard that the gig, if we were going to deprioritize and phase something, the I think it was Steve that said, you know, the gigabytes or the size of the payload might be a second phase. Did I hear that right? And then if we look at let's focus on the denominators for now. This is where it's specific to clinician versus patient. So if we look at the clinician-facing apps, though the numerators are similar for both of these, the clinician denominators we had left in there were context. So the first one is providers with at least one session to just give some context to these numerators in the context of providers that have had, you know, how many providers that are active. We dropped the additional denominator of providers with at least one documented encounter because we didn't see the marginal value over just using providers who've had at least one session. Is there any disagreement with trimming that one? Not having the providers with at least one documented encounter? Instead, just using providers who've had at least one session? No disagreement. Okay. Also, we wanted the count of documented encounters was an attempt to try to give context to these numerators, normalizing somehow to population size, right? So, you know, 10 API calls when it's one patient versus 10 when it's 500 patients. It was a gross attempt to get some sense of use by population size. And then the last, and then I'll pause for this. I needed to understand the distribution of affability. It gets back to the site question again. So I hope we already discussed that one. So aside from that one, any comments about the denominators for clinicians before we move to providers?
Go ahead.
I'm okay with the proposal in I of just counting providers with at least one EHR session. But I guess I want to highlight that could certainly count people who aren't seeing patients, because you could have people who have a session for the purpose of looking at analytics, doing clinical review, research, managing an ACO. There could be reasons providers are logging into the EHR that are not going to represent actively seeing patients. So as long as we contextually understand that, I think it's fine to measure. But if we think it's sort of representing active care, that might not be true. Well, that won't be true.
Yeah. I think if it was the context of, I guess it gets down to a user, right? If do you have privilege? If you're somebody who has privileges to practice and use the EHR at that site, you're a clinician. Is all we're measuring clinician apps that are only used in the context of a patient encounter? Because it might be a positive that we're actually including providers we've logged on, so we can, as value-based care escalates, that there may be a lot of value-added activity substituting for appointments. We wouldn't capture it if we only... So maybe it's not a bad thing to capture more than just clinicians who've seen patients. Thoughts?
I agree, Jim. I put that in the chat. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on. APIs can bring value to all sorts of workflows beyond direct patient care.
Okay, let's pivot. I'm going to go ahead and get through, and then when we're done, we can...
Sorry, Jim.
Go ahead.
Jim, there's one question. There's a question or comment from Zahid as well. Zahid, please go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So I think I'm still having trouble with something that Sasha was pointing out earlier, that having these measures being sort of numerator denominator type of measures, instead of, for instance, a number of active clinicians using a certain version of FHIR per month, for instance. So to me, that sounds like in the sort of app world at large, you have number of active Facebook users or Google users. So it gives you a certain amount of active user volume per month or per quarter or whatever within a performance period. To me, that type of a measure would probably give you more information than trying to sort of link specific denominators to the volumes, which actually, if you go back to patient and clinician access measures, a part of this volume is already in those measures as well. It's just that we're going to now say number of active clinicians or number of active patients using a specific type of EHR capability, which in this context is FHIR version 4 or FHIR version 3. So to me, those types of metrics probably would make more sense from what we're trying to get at, certainly in the first phase of this.
So am I hearing a proposal then to combine a couple of these comments into a concrete action to have counts per month and then context, and that's what we used to call numerators.
Active clinician users or active, however those are defined, or, active, the word active clinician is already in here, per a certain amount of time for a specific resource. I mean, for a specific type of standard.
Yep.
Not the resource, but the standard itself.
Yeah.
Yep.
We have in the denominators now, we have this idea of an active provider, but we also have a measure of how much EHR use that provider is taking advantage of. How would you recommend having both of those, capturing both of those aspects of of that metric?
Right. So the number of active users within a certain time period would define the number of people who are using it within a certain time frame.
Yep. Our active providers are providers with at least one EHR session.
Right.
But it doesn't give us a sense for how many encounters that...
Yeah, I mean, I think the encounter level sort of thing gets into the whole issue of, you know, the API use and how it will be incorporated into the encounter framework. And so, I mean, those are the types of granular metrics that perhaps could be at a future sort of aspirational stage.
After that, Ken.
Yeah. Jim, do you want to try to express this optimally here? So are we saying that the count of documented encounters in the period is something that's aspirational?
Yeah. Well, what I'm hearing you say sounds very much like we're saying the same thing, right? Because all the denominators are in the context of a unit of measure of time, right? So all the combinations are going to be numerator and then denominator during that time period, right? And so, like, for example, in the clinician apps, provider with at least one session, you know, wouldn't that obviously be number of providers with at least one session for the three-month period or one-year period? And that's a denominator because it gives context to one of the numerator metrics we're interested in.
I mean, you could potentially have number of sessions as a separate metric that could still be sort of number of active users is one metric and the number of sessions per active user or something like that could be a metric that doesn't specifically tie to a percentage of some sort or a ratio of some sort, which is where I'm having a little trouble understanding this type of measure.
I wonder if there's if it's necessary to lose that resolution in order to simplify.
I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to process. If you look at numerator one and, quote, denominator one, if you will, the denominator is providers with at least one session during the reporting period, right? Then a numerator of the volume of calls or volume of whatever, that's useful because it gives us a bit of a distribution, like per how many, per 1,000 doctors, or was that per 100 doctors, that numerator, right? And if there was a denominator that was number of sessions, then it's still valuable because you're now measuring a different context, the volume for any divided by the number of sessions, how much data is being transferred per session. So they both seem valid.
Looks like Sasha has a comment as well. Sasha, do you want to go ahead?
I think I was going to say exactly what Jim was. I think we're going to have some contextual counts that don't directly relate to the sort of API call counts, for example. I'm not reading that we're trying to associate each of the providers who had at least one session with the API calls. Or is that intended?
I mean, I think if it's at the EHR level, and LNC, for example, is a customer looking at this, for the marketplaces, right? And knowing that over time the number of API calls per session is dramatically going up or flattening, right? So it's going to be big gross numbers, right? And knowing that per session, here's how much activity is happening, or per provider, how much activity. Those are valuable insights, I would think, for us as a nation to know the health of the industry. Is it growing? Is it growing in use? Is it growing in amount of data exchanged? That was the idea.
So you would gather, like, if we were gathering data for HCA, we would get a number of providers with at least one session, right? Like, say, 1,000.
Yeah.
And we get a number of encounters, which would be, I don't know, 100,000. I'm totally making up numbers. And then there would those would sort of give context to the number of API calls for the Fire R4, you know, problem read resource,
right?
Might be, 300,000. And we'd like, okay, well, 300,000 might seem like a lot compared to some other site's number, but if we sort of compare it with the contextual counts, but there's not going to be like a provider one at HCA had 20,000
yeah.
API calls and provider two at HCA had 10,000 API calls. It's just
right. That's okay if you're like a Mickey or somebody looking at this saying,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, because there's a time element too, right? Is it a growing industry or not? You know, that each of these
yeah.
different ratios, whether we call them numerator, I guess they are numerator and denominators, gives us unique insight into the health of various aspects of how we built this and whether it's growing and being used over time.
Yeah. Along those lines, I'd just like to step back for a minute. And I know there was some suggestion of phasing the total volume of transfer, the total in gigabytes of data, into a later phase. But I'm wondering if there's a reason to phase that in a later phase, since the rule does allow for charges for API calls. And so that seems to me that it would be have to be measurable in the early phase.
Isn't the sort of charging by volume only applicable if the vendor is providing the hardware, which would not be true across all models?
Taking the cost out for a second, I was just talking about knowing the volume.
And the reason for knowing volume, Kim, was in part, I think, because, you know, that we couldn't get from activity was because of implications of load on the system, infrastructure concerns, equity of use. We'll talk a little bit about, is there any more? I think those are the primary reasons, right?
Yeah. And also just to understand for planning purposes what kinds of services, cloud services, support, and also to, as a metric, as we were saying before, of the growth of this, of the use of this technology.
Yeah, hey, I maybe people can respond in the comments. I think there's a few other sections we wanted to go ahead and cover.
Yeah.
Can I move to patient-facing apps for a minute, because we have some questions here. And whether we call them denominators or not, really they're just a set of independent data fields that in combination give insights that the single number itself doesn't, right? So if we take that sort of approach for patient-facing apps now, there's interest in, you know, wanting to track how patients are using these apps in the context of their encounters. But also, from our last discussion, we wanted to make sure we didn't lose patients who did not have an encounter because it was a substitute for this. And I know last time we had a little discussion about if these are one-year reporting periods, and it doesn't matter quite as much initially. But still, so therefore, one of the first measures was need to track the above numerators across all patients who use the app. So that's, of those who are logging on, what does the distribution of those numerators look like? and that's why one of the denominators ought to be any patient who had a log on, whether they had an appointment within the period or not. We also wanted to track people who are having encounters. And one of the questions for the groups, though, was, it's almost like a Venn diagram, right, or three bubbles. One is total number of patients. There's a subset that, whether they've had encounters or not, are using this. That's the set of patients who've actually logged on once. And then a subset of that are patients who've had an encounter. And so one question is, should we attempt to try to understand the patient-facing apps, you know, from a total, the number of patients who had an encounter is a surrogate for either volume or complexity of population. So we feel like that's useful to capture if you're normalizing it to some volume complexity of patient. But then if we just do that, we may neglect to get insights into who's using it outside of encounters. So the question was, should we have, you know, two combinations, one being of all patients who have had an encounter, what is the distribution of their use above? And should a second metric be, you know, some percentage of, you know, how many patients are using it who've not had an encounter? Thoughts?
Jim, is that different than what you were thinking on the provider side? Or are you thinking the provider contextual numbers would also stratify?
Not quite catching. There is an analogy to normalizing, and there's a subtle difference between how we're normalizing it when it's patients using it, but they're related, for, you know, versus when it's a clinician using it.
I guess from my perspective, it's just going to, you know, double the report processing. So if that's where folks want to spend their hardware processing tokens, it's doable to report these twice, right? Kind of separate counts for stratifications there. But it's not without extra processing.
Great point. And I just, you know, from our perch, it seems like it's worth it. Because it's hard to imagine us not tracking a couple of at least mega metrics on, you know, patient usage, you know, for providers. So all this is going to create effort, and I hear you on the phasing, but it seemed like these were pretty key denominators. Otherwise, it's hard to know what to make of the numerator.
Steve, looks like you have a comment or question. Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, like the discussion we had about provider-facing apps, I mean, patient-facing apps are probably often, if not, you know, primarily going to function outside of the context of face-to-face encounters with clinicians. You know, but that's not a reason not to measure volume because, you know, how often a patient-facing app fires for a patient or a population of patients that have a lot of encounters is going to be relevant compared to how often those apps fire for about patients who have few encounters. So we still need to put it in the context of volume of care, but don't assume that those apps are firing in the context of that direct care.
Yeah. So we thought maybe the first metric was good, right? Or the first denominator, if you will. But then the second one could simply be, you know, a proportion of patient, you know, number of some difference, you know, how many patients, percentage of patients who logged on who didn't have an encounter. Because if that started exponentially growing and in parallel with value-based care, that's an interesting insight that people may be using it to augment care in new ways. We didn't want to leave that off the table.
So you're changing II to not be about encounters, but just to say patients who log into the portal who did not have any encounter in the reporting period?
Yeah, so we leave one in there, right, because that gets of people using it, you know, what sort of the volumes normalized. But the second one could simply be, the numerator denominator would be total. You know, if you took the total number of patients who logged on, what percentage of them had encounters? Right. So, for example, if the percent that didn't was 5% this year, but over time it went to 30%, then 60%, that's a really important trend, right?
Wouldn't that really be a measure for the patient access section that we talked about before? I mean, here I think.
Oh, I see. Even a different section than here.
Yeah, I guess there's some, because all these are new and added, I think there's some duplication with some of the other sections that we've talked about different measures. So in my mind, if we think it's valuable to stratify portal use counts by encounter, we should go edit our section on the patient access measures to add that stratification in that section, right, where we kind of already prioritized what we thought was most useful. And then here, I think we should focus on the minimal amount of contextual stuff to sort of orient it, and the sort of detailed measurements would be on the API stuff because that's more unique to this section. Although we do have another section on API use too, and I'm kind of confused about some of the overlap between that also.
So I think that's what I was referring to earlier, that there seems to be at least a little bit of overlap between the access and active user type of definition.
Well, this may be a question.
The other thing,
I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to ask one more question. So are we going to lock this into a portal usage, or is it any patient-facing app?
Well, I would think we would not want to lock it into just portal use, right?
Yeah.
Right, because this is,
go ahead.
The language might need to, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Thank you. We missed that. Hey, on the first one, I wonder if our chairs can comment about, I think you guys had mentioned in the past that there will be an iteration that looks across the different sections for consistency and eliminating duplication. Is that accurate? Is it good for us to at least make sure we're capturing what our intent is here? And then whether you put it in the patient access session or here is sort of the chair editing call?
Yeah, that's right, Jim. We'll work with ONC Urban as they're putting this together to see if it makes sense to have this kind of sit outside in an overarching section. But I think make sure we have it noted here.
Yeah, because I think the first denominator is going to give us important info, and the second one is just really trying to capture use that is not, you know, for example, if I have an encounter, I log on to one of these apps to check my lab results, yeah, you know, versus I didn't have my otherwise physical visit because I handled it in a substitutable way, right, through one of these apps. You can decide whether it's here or a different session. I think the per site one we've already talked about. We're going to have to do some thinking about what that means and how to actually get something meaningful. Can we scroll quickly to, I think, bulk fire? I don't think. The basic, I can be quick about these sections because, you know, one of the points made earlier is, oh, look at the total number of these. Well, a lot of them are actually the same numerator. It's just the way we've, you know, bundled it out. So it's not like you add all these up and that's the total number of metrics. Some of these are actually the same across patient, clinician, and fire. The only thing with the bulk fire is to get some sense of use of it normalized to the population size, again, for comparability. You know, like, and then the per site question we described above, I think we don't need to talk about. And then our goal was to say on per user type, and I know there'll be a lot of discussion here about, well, what's a user? What about research? Is there a terminology we point to? So questions about and discussion about the bulk fire part of this. Same things, but did it get done in bulk? And the only thing we removed is the write back because it didn't make sense for bulk fire to write back. Okay. I can go to the last one. Go ahead.
Maybe I'm missing a beat, but can you explain why bulk fire wouldn't write back? What if there was a subscription to a registry and there was an update? Wouldn't that write back to the bulk subscriber?
It's not impossible. I think it's there's a less mature community activity around that than with the apps. So
got it.
I would put it into, I mean, I think that is something we could consider phasing in at a later time.
Okay. I'm hoping that bulk fire will be our salvation to providers asking for a mass update on their 20,000 covered lives daily, which is killing us.
Yeah,
well, that's a really good point and good example, the ability to write back to registries, et cetera. So,
yeah, and that's also, I mean, Brian's point here is also why I think this total volume transferred is going to be an interesting question, because it'll interesting metric, because it will get at how much this is used. And I will say that just judging by the time frames for adoption of Smart on Fire versus Bulk Fire, Smart on Fire was about 7 years until, let's say, was actually 9 years until Apple started to use it at scale. Bulk Fire was 6 months from the time it was initiated as a project to the time CMS was using it. So I think there'll be some really fascinating lessons that we can learn from these metrics about how data moves through the health system.
Hey, on the good point there, on the per user type, that's where a lot of the discussion and chat was about. You understand we're trying to get at, understand, and I guess there's a little discussion about is we mean clinician versus non-clinician, and is that, you know, how would we go about, you know, what would we use for that? So the first question is, what do we all want to understand about who's using Bulk Fire? What level of granularity? Well, can you get down there, payer, researcher, internal user? Is it, you know, does everyone agree with, not necessarily the priority, but the value of what we're trying to capture there? And then does anyone have thoughts about the feasibility of approach?
I think Ken probably has the most experience with this, and my question also is around the whether it should be the fire resources as a count, or could it be just the same consistency, consistent with the previous thing that it's a fire version usage,
yeah,
and the gigabytes that would be more consistent. But Ken, I don't know whether you think the resources would be important in this context,
well,
of bulk fire.
The reason we did include the resources for all of these metrics was for a couple of things. One is to see what resources are being transferred, are being used, which ones appear to be valuable, which ones may be in API calls that are outside of the U.S. CDI, suggesting that there could be value in updating U.S. CDI to include highly used resources. It's really about that kind of regulatory planning, to see whether the ecosystem is handling it through just sort of best practice, or whether there are resources not there. I mean, if you look at US CDI you try to use it, you will very quickly stumble upon data resources that you wish were there that I think would be very highly desirable across the system, and which will almost certainly be folded in over some period of time. But this is the opportunity to measure that so that there can be a bit of regulatory science behind the standards making process.
Maybe just to make sure we get through it, and then we can comment on any section. Didn't come back to that. On the EHRA exchange, the issue here was, you know, with the EHR technology coming in 2023, I guess, to exchange the full EHRA, the goal here was to understand the volume of requests that are being processed from patients as well as institutions, and then some sense of cost to client. Comments about this section?
I think we'd need a little bit more definition to respond to, like per number of sites as a contextual item has the same sites definitional challenge we talked about above. So we might want a different contextual count. In fact, the same contextual counts about like numbers of encounters or number of users might be applicable to reuse here. And then as far as costs, I think we just need a lot more information about how that would be measured. Some of the costs I anticipate are going to be hardware processing costs, which in, you know, Epic's model, we don't directly know, right? If you have to buy another Clarity server to export more EHI, I don't have any direct insight into sort of what marginal cost of that Clarity server to attribute to EHI export versus your other Clarity activity.
So yeah.
I don't know that, like, costs in general is reportable by the developer in this way. You could ask for, like, if they're charging license fees for the feature, what they are.
Well, I like that. I think, to me, that's consistent. Because that would be, you're either absorbing it strategically as a company and capturing it on future revenue price adjustments, or you're charging a fee, right? Or you're just eating it as a strategic platform necessary to do business. Is that, I mean, those are the three ways people might handle costs like that, correct?
Right.
And if the goal is, I mean, our high-level goal, Ken and Bill, I think, was that we looked at this and said, boy, all these metrics, but, you know, what's the burden? What's the squeeze, right? And maybe license fees for that regular, or get at meaningful fees, meaningful way to measure it. Would people agree with that one as an initial measure for cost?
I can live with it, Jim. But I guess my sense is that you're actually going to spend more in terms of your staff configuration of the feature and your hardware to support the feature than you are going to pay in license fees. So I think the sort of, I can live with it as a practical thing to measure. Whether it's meaningful in sort of expressing the cost of EHI export to the industry, no.
Ken, what are your thoughts? I mean, there's a little bit of an equity thing, you know.
Yeah.
Do small EHR vendors have to? Go ahead.
Yeah, Ken, why don't you go first if you have a comment? Then Steve Waldron, I see your hand up. And then,
yeah.
Jim, there's also several comments in the chat from Steve Lane and Brian on this also.
Yeah. Well, why don't we hear from the group before I comment?
Okay, Steve Waldron, why don't you please go ahead first?
Yeah. So I put in there, I think fees make sense rather than costs. I just don't think we'll be able to get the cost. And I guess when I saw this, what I was thinking was just transparency. So not that you would compare or contrast or say is it good or bad, but rather just that there's transparency so we understand what those costs are and how people are implementing those on the EHR side.
And Steve, thanks, Steve Waldron. Steve Lane, I know you had your hand up for a bit, back down, and lots of comments. Anything you want to articulate?
Again, just to put voice to my comments, I think, you know, trying to measure costs is really important if we're ever going to be able to establish value for this technology. So while it's hard, you know, in the same interest of phasing, we should find those costs that we can measure reasonably without too much burden, you know, in a phase one, and then create a roadmap for where that's going to go. I also wanted to respond to Ken's comment about the need to expand US CDI to support the app ecosystem. This has come up in our US CDI task force as well, and we have a specific recommendation drafted about this that we will be presenting in, you know, the same session where this task force is presenting next week. And I think it would serve us all well if we could point out that synergy between our work.
Great. Do you have any suggestions on what some of those measurable costs would be in year one that we should add here?
I mean, people talked about, you know, hardware costs, you know, cloud costs, you know, operational costs, you know, software costs. I mean, you could think through the various categories and think about which of those represent the lowest hanging fruit that most, you know, vendors and or providers would be able to get at without too much trouble. I'm really sensitive to Abby's comment that, you know, small practices, you know, we can't expect them to invest in a lot of cost accounting, you know, to support this. So, you know, trying to get at something, I mean, maybe it's related to, you know, computer, you know, cycles, you know, that are used to process them. But I mean, trying to start somewhere, I think, is valuable.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, I'm going to just
May I ask? Sure. May I ask one more question? I think it might also be good to define what cost means, because there's the EHR's cost, and then there's a cost to the buyer of the EHR that's different. So, are we implying here the cost that the EHR incurs in providing services, or is this the fee that they charge, which is the cost to the users?
Well, both would love people's input. We were thinking initially, you know, cost to client, to user, right? Were people charging? But that's where fees becomes attractive, right? But really, that may or may not capture what the actual investment cost of the infrastructure. Maybe it's a surrogate for that, maybe not.
Yeah, I think whatever it is, we should probably define it.
I'd say we start with cost to client, because it sounds pretty complex and burdensome to figure out how to capture all those accounting costs with each EMR company, how they account for what they spend on platform versus. Is everybody good with that, starting with cost to client?
That makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Hey, just when we can come back and visit any of these, just to make sure we've gotten through it. The second to last one is really about ONC understanding how the vendors and you know, platforms are utilizing reusable, substitutable smart apps, for example, versus you know, non-reusable, non-substitutable. And I think we had some discussion last time about, you know, do all the metrics have to be part of the actual certified certification criteria? And I think our thoughts on this are that the actual SmartFire apps are part of the certification criteria, and we're really targeting measurement around the use of those kinds of apps versus others. And so contextual measures around it to get context that makes the measurement meaningful are appropriate. And so, for example, the industry understanding whether reusable apps is decreasing, flat, or increasing versus people using a more proprietary approach. So our context is really important to understand what's happening with SMART. And then the very last one after that is just the same discussion about cost. ONC getting some insight into cost, and I think we And do you have any further comment? It sounds like fees is where we're landing.
Yeah.
First phase.
So it'll be the total fees charged.
Yeah, per unit time. Total fees charged specifically for this capability? Is that the more precise wording?
Steve, did you want to chime in here, Steve Lane?
Yeah, thanks. I was actually thinking about this challenge of measurements and how they relate to certified functionality. And I think, you know, Sasha's made a good point repeatedly that, you know, if you measure the things that are certified, then, you know, you can have a better feeling that you'll be measuring apples and apples because everyone's required to do something in a certain way. But if you do only that, you're really looking only in the rearview mirror, you know, which has value, but it doesn't sort of put you in a place to generate information and knowledge that would allow you to advance the certification requirements. So I just think that there's a balance here where we want, I think, to be putting in some requirements for measurements that go beyond the certified functionality so that we can then inform future changes in certification. So this is kind of a meta observation.
We can, I think we've gotten through our recommendations, so please, any other comments about any of the other sections people want to go back? I don't think we landed the bulk fire understanding per user type. I think no one, unless I'm missing it, no one commented on how we would do that and what is it we want. I mean, on a high level, we're trying to understand different kinds of users, right? But Ken, what are your thoughts about what would be useful? I mean, would clinician versus patient, or go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be useful to know what the ecosystem using fire bulk data looks like, where what it's weighted towards, therefore what that would inform what data elements are available, how payment programs might be designed around bulk fire if the use is increasing or if the use is low, and CMS is trying to develop programs around bulk fire. Are there barriers that they need to identify? So I think payer is one that's of specific importance to current policies and rules. It would be nice to understand other user types, public health, versus internal clinician users versus, pharma conducting clinical trials, which would come under researcher, interested in the group input.
And given all that, and I'm anticipating that there will be a lack of established terminology for all that, but I may be wrong, I wonder, would it be useful to at least know, and would it be measurable for the vendors in the room to get a sense of patient requested versus health system requested versus other, just as a start? I mean, I know we'd love to have granularity if it exists, but if we were to phase it, would we start with just three pieces to the pie so if you can get a sense of non-clinician, non-patient, maybe it's patient-payer, patient-clinician-payer other or something. Would that be a useful
start?
Jim and Ken, sorry. Maybe we can pause on that for a minute. Task Force can think about it, and we can quickly turn over to public comment. We're right at 11:20, so maybe we can do public comment, and then we'll come right back to this. And just a reminder, we're wrapping up at 11:30.
All right. Thanks, Raj. And operator, can we open up the line for public comments?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up the handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we poll for comments.
All right. And while we're waiting, I just want to invite everyone to attend next week's HITAC meeting. This is the full committee meeting next Thursday. And we are scheduled to meet actually at 10 o'clock. I know the HITAC members' calendar says 9:30, but we'll be moving it to 10. And so, again, we invite everyone to join and listen to the task force recommendations for the EHR reporting program and also the USCDI task force. Operator, do we have any public comments?
There are no comments at this time.
All right. Thank you. Raj?
Jim, Ken, I interrupt you. Please go ahead. Ken, I think you were going to comment on this.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, I do like Jim's suggestion of types of users. I think with bulk specifically, we probably won't have patient requests, but there could be internal versus third-party requests, and perhaps there are I guess I would look to Sasha to see if there's any methods for distinguishing among third party versus internal, first of all, and then among those third parties, whether there are certain types of authorizations that would allow more fine-grained taxonomization.
Any additional comments on that? We have about 7 minutes left here and want to make sure we can get as far as we can in terms of consensus on these.
I think one of the use cases for bulk fire is really the analytics and quality measurement use cases. And that, again, I think Ken may have been implying that is sort of a back-end thing rather than necessarily provided directly interfacing in a sort of API sort of way. So the question is, could this be like an instance of a download section or something of that nature that might accurately capture these instances of either the initial load or the subsequent updates and loads, which will be mostly sort of in a batch sort of way.
Yeah, the back-end services may end up acquiring data that the health system slices and dices outside the purview
right.
of the vendor, yes, of the developer.
Right, so it would be more like a sort of a instance of a nightly load, for instance.
Yes.
Which would need to be the contextual count.
Hey, Jim Durgis here. Do we think, like, are we really trying to get at, if somebody makes a request, in order to prove you're not information blocking, you know, I'm guessing there's going to be a process that documents the date, time, and reason for the request to make sure that it doesn't fall within one of the information blocking exceptions, right? Do we believe that part of the request process will, where they fill in the reason for the request, is that really what we're after, Ken and team? That you know, is it for treatment, payment, operations, you know, CDS, So first of all, is there a capture of the reason, and second of all, is there a terminology or some sort of high level structuring of that? That could be leveraged, and that's what we use
yeah.
to understand.
I mean, I would say that aside from the back-end services, where that would be the health system, that will be an HCA pulling the data out and slicing and dicing it in its own data warehouse or analytic engine. I would imagine that bulk fire requests are going to need some kind of justification and authorization, and that there could be an opportunity to include a taxonomy in that authorization as to what type of user you are.
Or even do we need type if really what we're after is reason? I mean, maybe we need both in an ideal world,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just wondering, is the reason enough for a phase one? And are the EMR companies, vendors on the phone far enough along with your specs for the 2023 capability that you could answer whether that's going to be captured? Did we lose Sasha?
Maybe.
I mean, to defend yourself against information blocking, there's some HIPAA still applies, right? Someone has to have either patient permission documented or and for these bulk transfers, it's probably not going to be the patient, so there's probably going to have to be a reason. And so, you know, reason maybe phase one, and maybe phase two is determining a more granular type of user terminology, unless one exists today. To your question, Ken.
Yeah. I'm making a note.
I think
go ahead.
Yeah, no, you go ahead, Ken. Yeah, I think the phased approach makes sense. And just a heads up, I don't see Sasha in the attendee list any longer, so she may have had to drop.
Yep. So I think Jim and I can clean this up according to what we all heard today in this extremely thoughtful discussion. But I'll look to the co-chairs as to the process to get this over the finish line, which is rapidly approaching.
Perfect. Thanks, Ken. So maybe we can just spend the last 2 minutes here talking quickly about that timeline. And Jill, please jump in. ONC, Urban, please jump in as well. So Jill and I will be meeting later this afternoon to go through all of the recommendations and synthesize those a bit more. I think everybody has seen the current version of the PowerPoint slide deck. So if you have any final comments on those, please send them to us by end of day today. That's the deadline to get those back to us. So you've had it, you may not have had a chance to look at it, but it's been with you for the last few days. So please send any final comments you have to us by end of day today so we can get those incorporated into the slides. Jim and Ken, if you can take the quick pass at just cleaning this up as much as you can. I'm not sure what your schedules look like, but if there's any way to do that in the next few hours, that would be ideal. If not, maybe we can talk offline about the timeline. And then the plan is to have everything over to the ONC and Urban teams by tomorrow morning so they can do final slide cleanup and we end up with our final presentation. Recognizing that Monday is a holiday and we'd like this to go out to the HITACH early next week, so by Tuesday, so that they have time to look at this prior to Thursday's meeting. Jill, ONC, Urban, does that sound right?
Yeah,
right to me.
To add. Yeah, I wanted to just make sure on the timeline. I know that I thought I remember ONC wanting to get the HITACH meeting slides by tomorrow evening. So is Tuesday morning okay?
Yeah, the preferred ideal state would be that we get the slides and the report to the HITACH members by the end of day tomorrow. So if they choose to look at them over the weekend, that's great. But hey, we'll see how things go. We're making our best efforts here to get it to the HITACH members as quickly as possible.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mike. Raj, I don't have any additional comments.
Okay, thanks, Jill. Thanks, Mike. I think we can hit that. So the main point for the task force is please get any comments you have on any of these measures, any final thoughts, comments to us by end of day today so that we can make sure that gets synthesized and included. I want to thank everybody for their dedication and hard work to this. This has been fast and furious, and everybody's done such a great job making each of these meetings every week and providing such valuable feedback, both live during these meetings and offline asynchronously. So thank you so much. There's no doubt that these are going to be impactful and is going to help move things forward. So we're right there at the finish line, and we'll get through it, and we're looking forward to hearing everybody's feedback and then talking again next week at the formal HITAC meeting.
Thank you, everyone.
Take care, everybody.
Bye now.